Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm told it's Perreo Fridays.
Perreo. Really roll that R, Woody.
Brian, can you roll your R?
Yeah, I can roll it, but nice. I have no idea what they're saying in any of the songs, but I do like it.
Yeah. Perreo Friday here on WQAM. Hockman and Crowder, but Chris Whittingham, Brian Monroe, taking you up until 6 p.m. this evening. In about 15 minutes, talk to Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. He writes about the NBA for them. Obviously, talking plenty of Kawhi, Jimmy Butler, lots going on.
Yeah, anytime we can swap out a gator for a cane, you know it's always a better show.
Yeah, it goes without saying.
Hey, come on now.
Goes without saying. By the way, Rohan, who lives in New York and writes for Sports Illustrated, still repping a 954 phone number. He's from here. So, and he told me specifically, because I asked him what number can we call him at, and he gave me a 954 number. He was very proud of the fact.
Of course.
That despite moving around the country, he is a 954 man.
Is it bad that I still have my 561 number then?
No, man. Okay. That's where you're from.
I didn't change my high school number. I was like, you know what? I'm not going through it.
I've actually had to change my number twice.
Stalkers?
I wish.
No?
No. So the first time was because I was in Vegas. And so this is actually part of a very long story. So I went to, when I was working at 790, they would send us all the time for fights.
Okay.
And so I would be like, I was the guy that went because like the afternoon show didn't want to go. Well, it was back when Levitar was still the afternoon show, so they wouldn't go. The morning show, it's too early, and like the midday show, it's like a 2-hour show. So they would send me, I was the night host. And
rough.
So I'd be on at like 4. You know, it was great. So it's like my first 5 times I went to Vegas were all because of that. And so one time I went, I was doing an afternoon show. And my flight was right after the show. So I actually had to leave like in the middle of the show. And then my flight was supposed to be at 7, gets delayed until 10 Eastern. I land in Vegas at like 1:30 in the morning Pacific. And I get to my room at a Vegas hotel and they had given it away because I got there so late. That they had like said, we're booked solid. We gave away your room. And so we're going to have to put you in New York. And so for my troubles, they gave me one of those rooms that has the hot tub inside
of
it.
Yes.
And so it was a little bit extra. So I walk in, it's like 4:30 in the morning, Pacific time, after all. First off, the walk across the pedestrian bridge from MGM to New York at 3 in the morning is a terrifying proposition. Like, you'll see every vice in the world, every kind of person in the universe, 3:30 in the morning on the pedestrian bridge on a Wednesday night in Las Vegas going from MGM to the New York. So they put me up in that room, and I walk by it and I go, never seen this before. So I was like, you know what? Tomorrow night, I'm exhausted. I'll fire up the water. I'll sit down. I'll relax, and I'll go to bed. So I fired it up. I sat in the tub. I put my phone off to the side. I didn't fill up the tub most of the way, but I guess enough water had been displaced that my phone, I pick it up, doesn't work.
What?
Totally fried. And so in order to get a new phone, I had to like create a new, they basically had to like cancel the account, create a new one. So that was one number change. And the other time was I wanted to upgrade to the 10 and Sprint basically, I shouldn't have said that. A cell phone carrier does this thing where they it's basically like a shell game of they get to say that they created a new account, and so you have to create a new account with them and then cancel the old one in order to get the iPhone 10. So that's what I did. So that was my second number change.
Jeez, no, I'm not giving my number.
Yeah, no, there are people that are very possessive about their cell phone numbers. And like the first time I changed mine, I had multiple people that were like, wait, why why would you ever change your cell phone number?
Exactly.
And it's like, I have to have a phone.
Yeah, no.
So, yeah.
I'm not changing.
So Vegas has taken has laid claim to many things, including my cell phone.
Vegas stories are always, they're always interesting.
They are indeed.
Yeah, I don't know
they
if I can indeed. Say mine's on air, but
I was about to say, do you have any? Alejandro, any Vegas stories?
I do.
Yeah.
I'm not
Not suitable for air?
No, definitely not. I also would never change my number. I'm with Brian on this one.
Yeah, no.
Never?
I would hold
okay,
out.
Okay, if I told you your phone just doesn't work and for the next year you're going to be without a phone unless you get a new phone number.
Nah, you could figure something else out.
Yeah.
You could hold your number.
Get like a Cricket Wireless or something
like
that?
Or you get a burner for a year and then you figure it out.
Burner for a year?
Burner for a year.
No, I couldn't do that. But you're getting a new number anyway. Because you have to tell a bunch of people, hey, you can only reach me at this phone number. And then when you go back to the old one, they'll be like, what are you doing with this? What's going on with your phone numbers?
But why couldn't they save your number?
They said the only way it was like the only way that we can give you a new phone is if you start a new account.
Because I've dropped my phone in the pool.
I didn't have like the Apple Care. You've done that before?
I've done a drunk. Oh, man.
Yeah. One time I had a brand new phone. It was not quite iPhone and not quite flip phone. It was one of those that to activate it, you slid the screen up.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it in my pocket and I just destroyed it with my ass. I just totally destroyed it. And I pulled my phone, I'm like, what the hell happened? And I destroyed it with my bum.
Literally at my boy's party. Everybody's chilling. We're having a good time. I'm drunk. I'm like, yeah, let's go in the pool. It's like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
All right. I'm the only one that goes in the pool. I get in the pool. I'm chilling. I text. And all of a sudden, my phone just goes bloop, bloop, bloop. And I just see it doing that.
Oh, no.
And I went from party to
panicking and freaking the hell out.
My
weird thing is I check my pockets after I go in the water. Like every time. Every time I go in a pool, every time I go to the beach. I'm checking my pockets after I've already been inside for an amount of time that I wouldn't be able to save my phone. But I'm still like checking the pockets going, is it there? Am I right?
Well, I make sure I can see it way away from
the
water.
Yeah, yeah. Long
anytime
in the
I go any close.
No, it doesn't matter. You just throw it in rice and you're good.
Oh, yeah. No.
No.
A little arroz.
What did I was
arroz con pollo?
I was in Vegas, so you know what somebody told me? Because it was like it worked on airplane mode, like off of Wi-Fi, but it just didn't have any cause like the SIM card or whatever was fried. And someone told me to use the blow dryer, aim the blow dryer at the phone to see if maybe it would dry off, but that didn't work. There's no saving. Once something is fried, there's no amount of heat or rice or absorbing of moisture that gets it
and
back.
And then they have that little tab inside the phone that knows when it gets wet. So
yeah,
when you
right.
say, oh, no, it didn't get wet, they look at it and go, you see that color?
Yeah.
That means it got wet.
Yeah,
it's
gone.
Like, gosh, come on, man. Give me my free phone.
So we have a lot to get to today. We have, we're actually going to talk some soccer today. We have a guest coming on at 5 p.m., Nico Cantor, who works for Univision, who's been covering the Copa America
out
of Brazil.
Are we talking about Uruguay? Oh, never mind. They're not in anymore.
No, Uruguay unfortunately didn't make
they're
the
not
final.
In anymore.
You want to start that this early, huh? Because you were already talking about, you know, jumping in a pool with your boys at 3 a.m. And I let that one slide,
no,
Brian.
No, I was at my boy's crib.
No, I don't think that's what you
my
said.
My boy's crib. Got to get it straight, man. Can't put yourself out there on air anyways.
I heard something else, man.
Mm. I got videos if you want those. I got evidence.
I mean, presumably there were, it was a mixed gathering?
3-1. 3-1.
Okay.
3-1, is that good?
That's solid.
Yeah, that's
solid.
Okay,
that's cool. We're good.
Yeah. All right.
I think we do all right.
We march on then. And then we're talking some NBA. Are you excited for the Summer League debut tonight of Zion v. RJ Barrett? There are people that watch Summer League, and I just, even though it's Zion v. RJ Barrett tonight, and I'm working tonight, so I have to like, you know, have something on in the background, but I don't think I think I'm going to watch many other things before I get to Zion v. RJ Barrett in Summer League.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be at dinner when that happens. How about that? I'm going to go to dinner. I'm not going to be watching that. I mean, literally just the Knicks released a video like saying, oh, what to expect this season. And I guess it was supposed to be like a good defense. But it was RJ Barrett and some other guys literally putting up air balls and hitting the backboard.
Really?
I was like,
The Knicks put up a video of their guys
the
hitting
Knicks put
air
up
ball
a video
the ball?
On Yikes. Their Twitter.
Yikes!
No, I don't know if it was an official account, but it was a Knicks account.
Oh,
I
Knicks
don't know if it was official.
No, it couldn't have been.
And everybody was
they
just clowning them.
Purpose.
They're like, so you're getting excited for air balls? Because, it was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad.
I mean, the Knicks, and people have criticized them because after they have this calamity where they get rid of Kristaps, and then they don't get Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, and then they've gone and signed these dudes that are mostly just okay. They're mostly just okay. And then, okay, so let's say, you know, the Heat right now, they're trying to get off of Goran Dragic so they can get under the hard tax. Wouldn't you rather just have Goran Dragic for a year than any of the dudes that you just signed?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and there was a whole other way to go about what they did versus what they ended up doing. But I guess So do you think that Zion, and just the fact that he's a first name, he's one of these LeBron figures that you just say the first name and everyone knows exactly who you're talking about. I think Zion is the next ESPN fixation. What Tebow was, what LeBron was, and the fact that his games were, you know, on Duke were, you know, well highly rated, you know, in, like much more rated in comparison to normal Duke games, that Zion was a figure that drew television interest a year ago in college basketball and might draw interest in summer league and might draw interest in the NBA. I feel like Zion's going to be one of these one name guys that ends up becoming part of the, you know, ESPN lexicon when people go, oh, the ESPN talks way too much about blank. I feel like Zion's the next guy.
Yeah, you know, he's got one thing going for him, that is social media, right? Mm-hmm. He's became a social media phenom.
Yeah.
And before he even got to high school, everyone was talking about this guy that just crazy dunks. Mm-hmm. That's how I knew about him. I was hey man, you see this kid in Carolina with the dunks and everything like that? Okay, cool. Didn't know anything else about him. Mm-hmm. Knew he dunked. So then he came out, I believe he was like the sixth best player overall, seventh best player overall.
He was top 10, but I think RJ Barrett was the consensus one.
I think it was RJ Barrett or Cam Reddish.
One of those two.
And one of them didn't live up. I think it was Cam Reddish. But then all of a sudden he goes to Duke and you're like, okay, they got the number 1, 3, and 6 player. Like, that's not even fair. But he then turned into that phenomenon of, I don't care about you guys. Mm-hmm. This is the next big piece we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And whatever he does, it's going to be all over ESPN.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, come on. Who explodes a shoe? Literally.
Yeah.
Who explodes a shoe?
I mean, you just watch him, and like Jay Billis perfectly illustrated on the draft broadcast where he's like, he went from one wing to the other corner. And I'm going, it's remarkable that he went from inside the paint to the corner on just a normal swing of the ball. And you watch him and you see the feats of athleticism that are unique to a guy. And it just, I feel like he's going to enter the sports lexicon as one of these, all you have to say is one name, Bonds, Tebow, Brady, MJ, LeBron, like these guys that are just, you say one name and you know who we're talking about, and he's a big time sports topic and talking point. And the fact that he's driving interest in summer league, I think is going to be a starting point. I think people are going to watch this game tonight in droves. The fact that it's the Knicks, the fact that it's Zion, and we're going to be watching on we're going to be on Tuesday morning find out how many people watch that, and it's going to be stunning. But I mean, this is what he is as a figure now.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I mean, listen, we're getting into the the whole soccer realm as far as one names, the whole name.
Yeah,
yards.
Messi, Ronaldo.
What's your first name? Okay, I'm going to put it on the back of your jersey, and nobody knows else but by that.
Why wouldn't Zion put just Zion on the back of the jersey? I mean, obviously, I imagine his family name means something to him.
Of course.
But, like, that's actually a great point. Why don't American athletes go on a first name basis or nickname basis? Because some of these, like, Fernandinho is not... That's not his name. It doesn't say Fernandinho on his birth certificate or Ronaldinho. It's Ronaldo or Ronald something, right? Why wouldn't you put, like, just back of a jersey? Like, wouldn't you sell more jerseys if the back of it just said Zion? Probably, right?
It'd be dope.
It's a great idea. Coming up next, we're talking NBA, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, much more. The Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Bruce Whittingham, Brian Monroe here on 560 WQAM here until 6 o'clock tonight. Lots to get to in the realm of the NBA, and we'll discuss a majority of it right now with Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Kind of joining us here on WQAM. Rohan, appreciate the time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
And repping the 954 here and abroad. So we very much appreciate it. So going into free agency, and I was actually on with Brian right before free agency started on Sunday, and I was making the case pretty strongly that the Heat were not going to be able to do anything as it relates to Jimmy Butler because they're over the luxury tax, much less a salary cap. What did you make of the fact that the Heat managed to pull this off and get Jimmy Butler in?
I mean, it was pretty crazy. I was with you guys. I was really skeptical. Obviously, we've seen the reports, but I was pretty skeptical that they could pull it off. I think what's interesting about this summer, and it's obviously not just Jimmy, is just the sign-and-trade coming back into the NBA. I don't think anyone expected that going into this offseason. We hadn't seen a sign-and-trade since 2017. Now we're just seeing a slew of them this summer. So I think what's happened is every time a new CBA is signed, there's always these unintended consequences, right? And I think GMs have kind of figured out how to navigate sign-and-trades again. which helps a team like the Heat, who we all know have been capped out, have had these bad contracts and whatnot. So I think they're in a good spot. It helps that I think Jimmy wanted to get his way to Miami, and the Sixers, I think, kind of wanted to move on from him. So it was just kind of a perfect storm of events. But, I mean, it's good for Heat management. Listen, I think if they had gone into the summer and got rid of Whiteside, it would have been a win. Coming out with Jimmy Butler is a pretty good for them.
For sure, and the fact that you managed to do both at the same time, I think, caught a lot of Heat fans by surprise. But the other part of this that I guess is confusing to some on the national scale, and maybe not as much here because we sort of understand what the Miami Heat organization has to offer, but people are going, wait a second, Jimmy Butler wants to win. Why didn't he want to stay in Philadelphia? There's some confusion as to the decision. Did you agree with that sort of skepticism, or do you understand why Jimmy Butler made this move and ultimately why he wanted to be a member of the Miami Heat?
I mean, I think we're gonna learn more about Jimmy's time in Philadelphia, I think, in the coming months, to be honest. I understand it from both sides. I mean, I think Jimmy Butler wants to win, but he wants to win on his terms, and I think Miami gives him an opportunity to do that. I think he trusts the front office to put pieces around him. There have been all kinds of stories, and you hear other people talk about it on podcasts and stuff. Did Jimmy get along with some of the younger guys in Philadelphia? Was it right for him to be on the timeline that they are on, where Ben Simmons is a younger player. Jimmy Butler demands kind of a certain level of commitment. And whether that's fair or not, I mean, he's run into problems in three different teams now, I think. But I don't think the Heat automatically means he's never going to win. I just think he wants an opportunity to win on his terms. And I think Miami gives him a better opportunity than that in Philadelphia. Whether the Heat will be more successful, I think that remains to be seen. But I think it gives him that chance that he wants.
Yeah, I think we all think that to be successful, you got to add a couple more pieces. And you hear the rumblings of DeMarcus Cousins. You hear Bradley Beal. Do you think that Pat Riley would be able to pull off another sign and trade or move some more pieces to get a Bradley Beal or DeMarcus Cousins to come down?
I wouldn't get my hopes up for something like that. I understand people are kind of have this invincible feeling right now. Anything is possible. We just got Jimmy Butler. Why not Bradley Beal? I think it would be a huge mistake if the Heat took on John Wall's contract. I think what you need is a similar situation maybe a year from now, maybe a few months from now, where Bradley Beal wants out of his contract, wants to force his way to Miami, and then maybe you could pull off a trade for him. But I think doing it this summer, getting caught up in the excitement, taking on John Wall's contract, giving up an asset like Justice or Bam, I think that would be a mistake. So I wouldn't get my hopes up for Bradley Beal just yet. I don't think, frankly, Beal hasn't made a strong case for himself to want out of Washington. I think he does have an emotional connection to that team, so I just don't see Bradley Beal happening. I do think the Heat are going to be active and try to move off some of these other contracts, but Beal would be a big surprise to me.
Can you explain for the audience, we're joined here by Ryan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated, can you explain why the John Wall, because I think people will hear, wait, I'm getting John Wall too and Brad Beal, why wouldn't I want that? And I think a lot of fans don't understand just how disastrous John Wall's contract extension is.
I mean, the John Wall contract is terrible for a lot of reasons. First of all, he's a guy, I like John Wall a lot as a player. I wanted him to work out, but his flaws kind of came to the forefront the last couple of years in Washington. I don't think he has a great reputation as a leader. Unfortunately, again, I really like him as a player. He wasn't able to lead that team to a lot of success in the postseason, even though, he did play well in a lot of those series. But, I mean, you look at his contract right now, 4 years, over $140 million left. He's just going to take up so much space in the salary cap, and you can't afford to pay a player like him as much money as you are if he isn't going to deliver you consistent success, and he hasn't proven that. And that isn't even getting into, he is coming off two huge injuries. I mean, he had surgery on his knee, and then he tore his Achilles after that. I mean, coming back from a back-to-back series of injuries like that is incredibly difficult. I don't want to take a chance. I mean, it's one thing to take a chance on someone like Kevin Durant coming off an Achilles injury, but there are even questions about him. Taking a chance on John Wall, a player who relies so much on his athleticism, doesn't have a consistent jump shot. Now he's coming off an Achilles injury, and he's going to play the most loaded position in the league. That is just a gigantic risk that there's no reason the Heat should be taking a risk like that on a player like John Wall at this point in his career. And it pains me to say that because I like him as a player. I'm not trying to, insult John Wall, but that would be poor management to take a risk on him at this point in his career.
Now, we don't know yet where Kawhi is going, but presuming that everything else stays relatively the same, even if he goes back to Toronto, Where do you see the Heat in the context of the Eastern Conference just with this one move alone, even if it's, if that's all they do, by losing Josh Richardson and Whiteside and adding Jimmy Butler? How much have they actually improved? They were a non-playoff team a year ago, fighting in that Orlando-Brooklyn area of the conference. You know Brooklyn's going to take a leap, but do you see them getting maybe up to the 5-6 range? Where do you see them in the conference of the in the context of the East?
I think they're going to be in that tier right below, you know, the Bucks, Raptors, and you know, maybe the Celtics now, the Sixers. I think the Heat are going to be in the tier right below that. I do think the 560 is the right area for them. You know, Brooklyn is going to take a somewhat of a leap this year, but I don't think Brooklyn is going to be wildly better next season than they were this season. I still think Brooklyn's ceiling is a second-round team. I'm not enamored by the Magic. I know they obviously had a very good season for them last year. I don't know if that means they're set up for consistent success there. I think the Heat are going to be right there, you know, kind of back in that 5-6 range, kind of where they were, you know, those last years of Dwayne Wade before he left for Chicago. I think they're going to be right in that group. And I think they're going to be competitive. I do think their ceiling is probably a second round. A conference finals would be, you know, an amazing season for the Heat. But I do think they'll be in the mix to kind of maybe push for a second round. It's going to help Spoh a lot to kind of have a scorer in his prime. I mean, he hasn't had that since the Big Three disbanded. And he's been able to make, you know, some pretty compelling offenses out of the rosters he's had. I think it's going to be – what I'm most concerned about the Heat, I think they might be a team that's better in the playoffs than the regular season. I love Spoh. I think the criticism of his is sometimes he takes a while to nail down the rotation. And, again, he's going to, again, have a lot of moving pieces. How does he configure Justice, Gorin, you know, Deion Waiters and Jimmy on the perimeter? How does he figure out who's going to handle the ball? I think that's going to take him some time. I think they're going to improve as the season goes along, but I think their ceiling is a second round right now.
Joined by Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. So beyond what the Heat did, what in NBA free agency has most interested you so far? Obviously, the Kawhi thing is still withstanding, but in terms of the rest of it, you know, obviously the Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant move, but even beyond that, what for you has most grabbed your attention so far in free agency?
I think just how many teams are kind of getting in the mix here. I think we're going to have so many good teams in the NBA next season. And I'm really excited just as a fan, as someone who is watching League Pass every night. There's going to be a lot of good teams. I mean, there's teams that didn't even get involved in free agency, like the Houston Rockets and the Denver Nuggets, who are going to be very good next season. And then you look just the breadth of good teams in the league right now, the Lakers, the Jazz, you know, the Celtics with Kemba Walker, the Sixers are going to be really good again. The Bucks, you know, brought their core back. The Heat made a move. I mean, there's just going to be so many teams that are relevant next season. I think that's what excites me and interests me as someone who follows the NBA, that what we've seen this summer is a spreading of the wealth. And I think it's going to be the first time in maybe, you know, something like 10 years where we just don't have a clear-cut final favorite in each conference. I think it's just going to be wide open around the league. And that's what interests me. That's what excites me, is just how wide open things are right now after free agency.
Unless, right, unless
Kawhi watch goes
unless
differently.
Unless Kawhi Leonard goes to the Lakers, then we're right back to where we started, even with the Warriors. Somebody even arguably, would it be just as bad as the Warriors, if not worse, just because, I mean, the strength of those guys individually, okay, as a collective, Golden State was incredible, but individually, that is almost more star talent than the Golden State Warriors had, which is incredible to say.
It is crazy. Here's what I'll say about Kawhi to the Lakers. I think Kawhi going to the Lakers, that team would be closer to the 2010 Heat than the 2016 Warriors.
Mm.
You know, I think they're obviously going to be loaded. They're going to have more top-end talent, but it's going to be so difficult for them to fill out their roster. Who's their starting shooting guard? Is it Troy Daniels? Can you play Kyle Kuzma, Anthony Davis, LeBron, and Kawhi together? Who's going to guard point guards? I do think that team is obviously going to be very good, but I don't think they're going to be the kind of runaway favorite the Warriors were. I do think they're going to be beatable, especially in this first year. You know, there's no great free agents left on the board. They're going to have a tough time finding the role players to fit around those guys, and the roster construction, I think, is going to be a little bit awkward. And I think, I think writers obsess about that more than general managers. You know, general managers want to get the top-end talent in there and figure it out. So it's going to be interesting, but I do think the Lakers aren't going to be the runaway favorites the Warriors were. I think they're going to be a little bit closer that first year of the Big Three in Miami, where we said, how is anyone going to beat these guys? And it was a little tricky for them. So even if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, I still think there are going to be a lot of good teams in the league. They're going to be the favorite, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a gap as the Warriors have been over the last few years.
But I understand what you're saying, and certainly we saw Carlos Arroyo and Zydrunas Ilgauskas and, you know, Mike Bibby was welcomed with open arms because, oh my God, we got Mike Bibby in that 2010-11 season and we were devastated because Troy Murphy didn't sign. I mean, there were any number of things that happened in that 2010-11 season that proves your point. But I just don't think in the history of the NBA there's been a collection of three guys who legitimately – so I think that there are usually at any one time in the NBA six or seven real difference makers where if you start your team with that guy, you can win the championship. And I think at one time in the NBA, there will be three of those six or seven guys on the same team. I don't think we've ever had more than two on the same team. This just as a collection of leading men on the same team. And look, maybe that bus heads, and certainly beyond a team-building standpoint, there's a chemistry standpoint of it too. But from an individual talent standpoint, I can't imagine there's been a group of guys like that in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know that I would disagree. I do think it would probably be the best top three of all time. I definitely would agree with that. You know, obviously, again, it's kind of that 4-8 where it, mm-hmm. they could get tricky, but I'm with you there. I do think their top three were probably the best top three of all time. I do wonder how their impact would get muted by playing with one another. You know, Anthony Davis is already going to get way less touches playing next to LeBron. How are LeBron and Kawhi going to work it out, you know, if it were to happen? But I do agree. On an individual level, those three guys together, I'm with you there. I don't know that there's a better top three of all time than those three together.
We're joined here by Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Now, of those teams, so you mentioned all that movement in the rest of the league that you think can leave it wide open, and I agree. If Kawhi ultimately picks anywhere but the Lakers, this can be one of the best seasons we've had in a while. Who are the two or three teams that you're most interested in terms of competing for the championship that maybe, you know, is Utah is one that certainly picked up a lot of buzz for what they've done. Who are some of the one or two teams that you think are going to be elevating into that conversation that maybe we're not used to being there?
I mean, Utah's going to be in there. I'm still really high on the Denver Nuggets. I think Denver was incredible last season, and they dealt with so many injuries during the regular season that people don't really take into account, and it's incredible that they still finished second in the conference. Despite all that, I think the Nuggets are going to be really good. I think what that team was lacking more than anything was playoff experience, and they got it. You know, their guys are all going to be more experienced next year. They're all sitting on the upswing of their career. So I think the Nuggets are going to be a team that's much more seriously in the championship conversation next season than people realize and aren't really talking about. I do think the Jazz are going to make that jump. The Jazz are kind of tailor-made for the playoffs right now with that lineup with Bogdanovich at the four. Even if they don't start him during the regular season, they're going to be a really good team in the playoffs. I'm really interested to see how the Sixers are kind of made to defeat the Bucks right now. I think that's why they brought in Al Horford. They need someone to defend Giannis. So, you know, those are the teams I have my eye on. But don't sleep on the Nuggets or the Rockets. Both those teams were really, really good last year. And even if they didn't make big changes, these other teams are still trying to catch up to them to some extent.
I want to get back to something you said earlier, which is as it relates to Jimmy Butler. The fact that there's maybe more of a story to get out in terms of what happened in Philadelphia. We know what happened in Minnesota. That played out very publicly. We know what happened in Chicago. That played out very publicly as well, where people are going, you know, it was Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade against the rest of the team. The fact that it's now three places for Jimmy Butler where it's been difficult for him to get on in a locker room is probably a warning sign for the Miami Heat. Do you think that there should be more of a concern about the fact that Jimmy Butler has not gotten on anywhere he's been?
Definitely. I think it's a concern. I mean, the Heat have shown they're able to handle personalities, right? Here's what I'll say about Jimmy to the Heat. This is the first time he's really chosen where he wants to play, right? Drafted by Chicago, traded to Minnesota, traded to Philadelphia. I think this is his first time, you know, similar to Kyrie, where he's gotten to choose where he wants to play. So the onus is on Jimmy to make it work. You know, he chose Miami. He wanted Miami. You know, show everyone why this was the location for you. But it definitely has to be a concern. It can't be something you would go, I mean, three different places where he got into arguments with teammates. I mean, you know, three is a pattern, right? I mean, you can't ignore that. You can't sweep that under the rug. It's definitely a concern. I will say, you know, if Spo was able to make it work with the attention of the big three, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, I think he can handle Jimmy Butler. I think it helps that Jimmy is the clear-cut number one on this team. You know, in Chicago, he was on the upswing. He had to work with Derrick Rose. In Minnesota, it was Towns and Wiggins. In Philadelphia, it was Simmons and Embiid. I think it helps Jimmy a lot that he's kind of the clear-cut number one guy here, and he can set the tone. And the organization's culture seems to match what he's looking for. So I think, you know, all those factors help a lot. He's choosing to play here. But the onus is on Jimmy to prove that he can be, you know, a good teammate, a good leader, because it's definitely concerning that it's not worked in three different places.
Right, and the fact that sort of what he's asked for his whole career in terms of the professionalism of his teammates and all that is something that you'll probably find here in Miami. But it's just it's bizarre to me that, I mean, obviously it is celebrated, and it's just such a huge step forward for Miami that they have a star player, but at the same time you're dealing with a personality that just hasn't worked in other places. And look, I mean, people can say that about Miami and that they tend to make things work, but they wanted to get Hassan Whiteside to work, and it didn't. They struggled last year to get James Johnson and Deion Waiters back to where they were and being in shape and at full performance. So it hasn't always been perfect around here. There have been, you know, guys that have, you know, sort of come and gone through here, but Miami does well to keep it quiet. But it doesn't always work here. So that for me is a big concern, especially anointing him as the leader of the team.
Yeah, it's definitely something you can't ignore. I'm with you there. I will say, you know, I think what makes Jimmy different than those guys is he wants to win, right? I mean, and you can say what you want about him as a teammate, but, you know, in terms of Whiteside, what was it? Was effort. Like, he wasn't giving that effort every night. You can't say that about Jimmy
sure.
Butler. You know, one thing about him is I think he's one of the bigger competitors in the league, and I do think the biggest thing about Jimmy is his issues with his teammates have always stemmed from that competitiveness. I think they've always stemmed from his determination. I'm not saying he's a perfect guy, but I don't think he has bad character either. I think his intentions, at least, I think are good, and his intentions are aligned with the Heat, which is, I'm pushing myself every day to win. I just expect everyone else to have that same level of commitment. I'm not saying that's necessarily fair, but I think what separates him from some of those other guys and other guys who, you know, maybe even Kyrie Irving, is I think Jimmy's intentions are very clear, and that is he's willing to do whatever it takes to win.
Ryan Nutcarney, check him out. Sports Illustrated, SI.com is where you read the work, and on Twitter, at Nutcarney as well. Appreciate the time, sir.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, that is Ryan Nutcarney joining us here on WQAM. Chris Whittingham, Brian Monroe here until 6. Radio.com. Radio.com. Chris Whittingham and Brian Monroe here until 6 p.m. on WQAM. In for Hochman and Crowder. We'll be on vacation for the whole of next week as well, with varying hosts filling in. We're watching right now. Is it Coco Gauff?
Coco!
Coco is, she's South Florida born, I believe Delray Beach.
Yep.
Or thereabouts. Is currently in the third round at Wimbledon, born. She's 15 years old. They actually just asked the trivia question on television. Who were the number one overall tennis players in, I think, April of 2004 when she was born? I mean, I'd imagine it was probably like
Serena,
like Federer and Serena, right?
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's safe to assume. But she already beat Venus in the first round, which is amazing,
yeah.
Right? To start, like, grew up idolizing Serena Williams, which for Serena Williams probably has to be a bit haunting that she's now going against players that just like didn't Tyler Hero say that the player he most looked up to as growing up in basketball was Devin Booker, and it's like, dude. Devin Booker's like 25. Why are you doing that to him, like making him feel old? And how young are you that you were looking up to Devin Booker?
Mm.
But Coco, in the third set right now, won the second set tiebreaker, which she lost the first one, so has to win the second set tiebreaker. Tremendous point, and is now just had her serve broken?
Yep.
Yeah, just had her serve broken. So she's up 4-3 in the third set at Wimbledon, and it's a nice local story. 15-year-old, third round of Wimbledon.
If you listen to her speak, she does not sound 15 years old.
Yeah.
She carries herself very well, great composure. And listening to the experts and stuff like that talk about her, they said, you know, we watched her in juniors, and she took that big leap as far as being calm, not mm-hmm. nervous,
yeah.
not stiff on the big stage. So, listen, anytime you get a 15-year-old to do something like that in a big tournament,
incredible.
But it's just a great story to have being locally. It's awesome.
And it's one of those things, we talked about it on Sunday, actually. We were on before free agency, where the way that, for example, youth players are developed in tennis is much different than we developed them
yep.
in American sports.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're starting to see some Americans going, hey, if we're not on the pro circuit 16, 17, 18, then I don't know if we really have the chance to be top-level professionals. And that's kind of terrifying, I imagine, for parents going, wait a second, if my kid wants to be good at soccer, like I heard Zlatan Ibrahimovic scored a goal last night for LA Galaxy. Actually scored twice. Both were assisted by this 17-year-old player that they have in the Galaxy Academy, who they've now brought through. He's choosing whether or not to play for the U.S. or Mexico. And he came out. Now he's fully professional. He's not going to college.
No.
He's a professional now. And Zlatan, after the game, says, if you're going to be good in Europe and you come from here and you start your career in MLS, you better start playing as a professional at 16 or 17 if you're going to be good at Europe.
That's facts.
Like you can't be 20 years old and just about be okay at professional level, and you get out of college at 22. So the fact that 6 years before you're due to get out of college, you're supposed to be at pro level, that's entirely different than the American sports setup, where even if it's 1 year of college, you have to do that. You have to enter at age 19 in the NBA or in the NFL. Was it 21 in the NFL? I think it is.
You got to be 3 years removed from college.
Okay.
So it means you have to either be redshirt sophomore or a true junior.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you sort of get from a professional football standpoint.
I get it in football because those are boys.
It's physical development.
Those are boys that are coming into college.
Jadeveon Clowney is a freshman. There's a special exception you'd make for him because he didn't look like a boy in college. Looked like
He still wasn't. He still wasn't very, very developed as far as what he would be going against at the next level. Football is one of the few sports that I could actually say you need some time to develop your body and you need to become a man, because those are grown men.
For sure.
In the NFL.
For
sure. You see the difference between like a rookie, even when it's just rookie camp. You look at the rookies in camp and you're like, man, they look awkward. And then you come into regular mini camp and then you're like, oh yeah, those are men right there.
Right.
And it's true. It's so weird, but it's, you could always tell who the rookies are. There's very few rookies that come into the league that don't look like rookies. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
But do you think that can you imagine this setup? So instead of college football developing players, each NFL team had an academy of 100 youth football players from their area. First off, can you imagine the Dolphins Academy? If they were able to sign players to pro contracts
from South Florida?
From 15.
Come on, you
sort of geographically split the country. And like Miami gets all of Southern Florida, Tampa gets West and Central Florida, and then the Jags get Northern Florida, and that's how we split it up. But like imagine that sort of setup. So you can sign a professional contracts with these guys. But do you think that if a young South Florida high school football player was in a fully professional environment from age 15? Instead of being in high school, you're in a fully professional environment and you're working with NFL weight trainers and in an NFL-type setup, that they wouldn't look so awkward when they got to rookie minicamp, and they would look so much different than the rest of the guys, probably. Or is it just literally a matter of puberty and physical development?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, right?
Yeah.
So puberty and physical development has something to do with it because, again, you got men and you got boys. But we talked about on a Sunday is that the college game is a little bit different than the NFL game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got some of these quarterbacks, it's the most important position on the field, that's never took a snap under center until they get into minicamp.
Or, given a play call in a huddle.
Yeah. It's like, okay, let me look at the cards. Cool. I know what to do.
Yeah.
And
the Oregon Duck is up there.
I know
what that means. Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah.
So now you get everybody knows John Gruden. He goes in there and gives you a 30-second play that you have to spit back out and regurgitate to your team. Guys are like, what?
and then you got to get to the line of scrimmage and you're, sliding protections and you're identifying Mike linebackers and you're changing routes and changing plays at the line of scrimmage. And when you see Peyton Manning reach age 31 and he's literally mastered the game, then that's incredible. But imagine if you were given 4 years to sort of be learning on that level and then get to the NFL at that stage. And then it's not just a quarterback too, but left tackles that are only ever standing up and in pass protection the whole game because they're in an air raid system. And now you got to line up in a three tight end set at the 1 yard line and try and run a running play. It's never done before. And so I do wonder if the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball took on some of these ideas that other sports have of developing younger players at a younger age, if their product would get better.
Their product would.
Yeah.
But it's never going to happen because that giant of NCAA is never going to let all that money go. because there's too much money involved.
But you know what? They don't have a say in the matter.
They grease the right pockets, so they do have a say.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. But so you think like there are the NCAA or colleges are paying professional leagues to maintain this set? I mean, maybe they are, but that would be grotesque.
I mean, think about it. Why can't the basketball players go straight to the league?
So I think the NBA has decided it's better for professional basketball if we don't have 18-year-olds running around not knowing what they're doing, right? And so let's keep them in college for a year so that by the time they get to the NFL, to the NBA, they're a bit more polished and a bit more professional. Like you said, with American football, I think the rule exists because the NFL goes, well, we'd have a bunch of 18-year-olds coming into the league because they wouldn't want to go to college and they wouldn't be physically ready. They'd be way behind. They wouldn't have any knowledge of any systems, much less the ones that you have to learn in the NFL, and it would harm the product of Whereas, and also, why are we going to take on this expenditure of building out an academy, of giving guys contracts, of doing out all these things when it's done for us for free? I don't think it's about the NCAA paying. I think it's about the fact that the NFL has to pay nothing for somewhat finished articles, somewhat developed articles that they get at NFL level when they get handed a player that's been somewhat developed. Now they only have to do that extra bit more.
So I will say that with the NFL only.
Yeah.
The NBA used to have it. You had guys like KG go straight to league. Mm-hmm. You had guys like Kobe Bryant, the whole nine yards. There's a select few of guys each year that deserve to go to the NBA.
Sure.
Now, I think they should redo the rule somehow where they say, hey, if you don't get drafted, you can go to college.
Right.
Figure it out where the guys that don't get drafted can go to college.
To me, it would be if you can come out of high school and get drafted in the top 10.
Yes.
Then you can go to the NBA. If you don't get,
lottery pick.
Okay, lottery. Yeah, sure. 14. Right, lottery pick. If you're not a lottery pick and you're a high school player, then from lottery on, you're not eligible to be selected. You're going to whatever college you've chosen, and that's how baseball does it, right? Baseball, you get the decision where you can either come out of high school or you can commit. You commit to your college, and depending on where you get selected and what your signing bonus would be and all of that, you can choose whether or not you want to go to college. And then if you go to college, you got to play for 3 years. So I actually think Major League Baseball of the leagues has it best.
Yeah,
but I still kind of wonder. If there's a fully professional tennis player at age 15, why couldn't that exist in other sports? Like, why couldn't that exist? I mean, it exists in soccer all over the world. Some of it is because, but tennis relies on physicality too. You have to have power in the serve. You have to have power in your deliveries down the lines to make life difficult. So, I mean, there's power in those sports too. I do think that the American sports rely a bit more on raw athleticism and, you know, having a body filled out rather than soccer, where you can be Lionel Messi size and the best player in the world. But I do kind of wonder if we did embark on something like that, if our sports might get better and if, you know, we might see something like 15-year-old NFL quarterback, which might seem insane, but who the hell knows what Trevor Lawrence looked like as a 15-year-old? Maybe he could have been ready. We don't know.
I don't know about that, man. I don't know. Listen, he is an unbelievable quarterback, but
Trevor Lawrence is ready to be a professional right now.
When you get into the NFL, it's completely different.
Yeah.
It's a different game, and people always talk about, the speed of the game, from high school to college to NFL. It takes a step faster, and the windows for an NFL quarterback close a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Physicality.
Yeah.
You're talking about, again, grown men coming at you.
Even
like,
just absorbing a hit.
Yes.
Right? Like who you're getting hit by.
Like, okay, so you're getting hit by some pretty big dudes in college.
High school, yeah.
But imagine Julius Peppers coming at you, 6'7", 290. Yeah. He's 30-something years old and still just a physical freak. So I would love to see the opportunity for certain players.
Mm-hmm.
Like John Madden said, at one point, DJ Williams was the only high school player that he ever seen that could make the jump to the NFL. Because physically, he was a grown man.
Yeah.
But even when DJ got to college, there was some growing up to do and some learning to do. And there was some weight training he still had to do to become a man.
Yeah.
So there's just, I think the NFL is a little bit different than every other sport. I feel like when the NBA gets back to, I think they said 2021, 2022 draft, they're going to go back to high schoolers being able to go straight to the league. The NFL is the only one that's going to have guys go to college, not have the right, but I do think they need to. I just don't see that giant of the NCAA.
Right. There's too much money in it.
They got their hands all over it.
Yeah.
They got their hands all the way to the AAU level in the basketball.
To me, but like the argument in not paying the players is that ultimately, even if we didn't have the best players, people would still go out, would still go to watch Michigan, right? Like, even if it wasn't an NFL development, if it was just, let's say the best guys went to the NFL and were in an academy and playing in an academy league that wasn't nearly as well attended, that people would still prefer to go watch Michigan because they love their college.
Of course.
Right? And so I guess the NCAA wouldn't stand really to lose any money if the best American football players around the country went to go play for an NFL team from a younger age, right? So I guess my argument would be that college football could potentially still be fine even if you don't get to watch Trevor Lawrence. It's a worse quarterback, but it's like watching the AAF with your university's logo on the
which was horrible.
Right, which is horrible, but that's what horrible. It would be. That's what it would be. It would
so
be,
that's horrible.
Okay, but isn't college football kind of bad, though?
What?
College football's bad.
Best thing ever.
Look, I love college football.
Oh, my God. Get me off the air with this guy.
I love college football, okay? Uh-oh. It's one of my favorite things.
It's bad. What but are you talking about?
In comparison about? To, like, the execution level at the NFL level, to me, college football is a game of mistakes, right? Where, basically, because it's a bunch of 18 to 21-year-olds that don't know what they're doing yet, they screw up all the time.
Have you watched Clemson execute? Have you watched Alabama execute?
Okay, but they still play in games that are in the 40s.
What were you doing on 4th of July yesterday? Did you hit that hit the pen too much? Are you really saying that right now? College football is more exciting at times than NFL.
I agree.
But he's not saying it's not exciting.
But what I'm saying is that excitement is born out of the fact that they're not as good at football. And that being bad on defense allows more offense because the defenders are screwing up. There's a giant space. And now all of a sudden we've got a game that's 56-55.
Yeah, no, I can't agree with you on that.
So you're saying that college football players are as good at football as NFL players.
Well, of course not. That's why they're not in the NFL.
But that's what I'm saying.
But to say that the game is that big of a gap, that it's the only reason why they score is when somebody's out of the way.
It's a massive gap.
I mean, if you watch SEC games, you're talking about 13-7 games. Why? Because the defense is executing.
Right. But
so that means nobody's out of their position. You just said.
Right.
The only way you score is because somebody's out of position.
Okay, but we can all say that offensive players are bad too, right?
You just talked about Trevor Lawrence. Is he bad? You just said he could make it to the NFL now.
But I'm making the argument that if we get rid of Trevor Lawrence's being in college football, that it would look like the AAF.
Well, if you take the best players at any college sports and put them in something else, they're going to be bad.
Okay, but how many colleges have players that are NFL level, right?
How many colleges?
How many?
117.
But what I'm saying, how many NFL level players are on a college team at any given moment? Somewhere between 8 and 11? Alabama's maybe got maximum 25?
Okay, well, Alabama guys don't translate all the time, so.
Right, exactly. But that's what I'm saying, right? I mean, they'll get drafted, but they can't crack it in the NFL. So, on the University of Miami right now, how many NFL-level guys are on the team?
Right now?
Right now, like somewhere between 6 and 10?
Yeah, 10.
So, we have an 85-roster team, and 6 and 10 of them can crack in the NFL. The rest, it's like watching the AAF.
But it's because they're boys. They need to get their bodies developed
more. Okay, but when they fully develop, they still won't be NFL caliber.
Oh, yeah, they will be. Yeah, they will be. Like I predicted in 2017, that 2017 defense, every single one of those players will play in the NFL. Every single one of them. The starters. And right now, all I got left is the linebackers. Yeah. And I guarantee you all three of them are going to make it to the NFL.
All right. So at that time, there was probably 15 NFL guys on the Miami Hurricanes.
Well,
the starting D.
But no matter what. And you had Njoku, and you had Christopher Herndon, who are both two young athletic tight ends. You had Mark Walton, playing for the Dolphins, had some offensive linemen in the league. All right. So, listen, it's about developing in college.
I agree. But ultimately,
but a
developmental team is not nearly as good as an NFL team. It's AAF level. It just doesn't have it has logos on the side of the helmet that you recognize and associate with being good, so you think that it's good. It's not as good. I still love it. I'm immensely entertained by college football. It's not nearly as good. You can't tell me that when a college team, maximum practice is 20 hours a week, that the maximum they can dedicate to their craft is 20 hours a week, that it can be good.
That's 20 hours a week with coaches.
Okay.
If you are a great college player and you want to succeed at the next level, you are going to be in the film room. You're going to be in the weight room by yourself with your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
So to say maximum 20, with coaches, NCAA guidelines. But we all know nowadays they got these little iPads that just go home and go, bloop, here's the next play.
Yeah.
Bloop, and they can watch whatever they want. So the reason why there's guys that are first-round picks and don't think on the field is the guys that take those iPads and watch film.
So how do you assess the gap in quality between college? You know, we're way late for a break. We'll continue this conversation when we come back. Chris Whittingham, Brian Monroe here until 6.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.